The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another Mission Minded. Our name is not changing here, Michael. It's called Mission Minded because we keep our mind on a mission in mind. We talk about non-for-profits. We talk about business. We take your emails, info@tonycurryradio.net. And, of course, you can hear the show every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Central Time on the TKR app. And tons of people listen to it there. And, of course, if you missed an episode, you can go to our podcast, the Tony Curry Radio Podcast, and listen to any of the shows you want. We have well over, 70, 80 different shows we've done. It's been fantastic. Great show. First of all, Michael, how you doing, brother? Everything good?
Well, I'm overcoming COVID a little bit. And I know we weren't. We were off last week, but and I made it through all the pandemic. Yeah, it finally got me.
Well, how did you know you had COVID? How did you know? You just went to a doctor?
Well, right. So I went and got just home test at the drugstore. And the reason I did it, I was trying to push through it. And I felt like I just kind of had some flu. And then I thought, well, you know what? If I'm contagious, I don't want to go in, coworkers and all that. But it was just getting the best of me. And sure enough, as soon as I tested, it came back strong positive. So
how about that?
I ended up quarantined for a few days, but I'm telling you, it packed a wallop for me.
Wow.
And my wife got it the second time she's gotten it. And, it just feels like a bad cold for her, but it felt like really severe flu. And I've still got a little fog coming out after, through it. So if I say something real crazy today, you may have to go in and edit it later.
I'm not giving you any excuses, my friend. You better be on fire today. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better. And knock on wood, I have not gotten it. I've never gotten the flu. So, a lot of people.
Oh,
like,
wow.
So someone must be living right around here. So what's
yeah.
happening? Whatever.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So we were talking about not changing the name to Mission Minded. We have a brand new show that you and I are going to start working on coming up here soon. And you have made a lot of changes at the Montgomery Area Food Bank because it's no longer called the Montgomery Area Food Bank. I want to listen. This is breaking news here, Mission Minded. Breaking news. This is before anyone even knows it's happening. Give me your brand new name, why you changed it, and congratulations. This is super exciting.
Yeah. So we will forever be known moving forward as the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. And nice. The reason for that is we were the Montgomery Area Food Bank, and of course, we're located in the city of Montgomery, in the county of Montgomery, but we serve such a broad area. And most people, because they don't know the difference between a food bank and a food pantry and, in the different counties, when we try to promote the Montgomery Food Bank, people go, well, why would I donate to Montgomery's food bank? I'll donate to my county's food bank. And it's because they really don't know the role of and the distinction between a food bank and a food pantry, where we're out acquiring and sourcing and gathering in, millions and millions of pounds of food to then distribute out to the different pantries and to help them in their individual counties. And so we found the name was so troublesome because it just affected us to be able to effectively market in some of these other areas. And so we came together, hired a great company locally here who's kind of led us through this process, had some focus groups. And the name Heart of Alabama has kind of a double entendre to it. First is it really fits us in where we're located across the state. We've got over half the state, but we're kind of go all the way from northwest Alabama all the way to southeast corner. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of an odd shape. So when you say Heart of Alabama, Montgomery's really in the heart of the state, right in the middle and right in. And so that really captures geographically that we're in the heart of Alabama. But also the second part is it kind of conveys the right spirit, which is we are a people who are compassionate and have a very caring attitude towards those who struggle with hunger and food insecurity. So we're very glad to carry forth this new name. And I think it better captures who we are. And of course, this is going right into a very new podcast that we're doing with you, mm-hmm. which again, we're very excited because there's really so much about food banking. It's more than just about sourcing food and distributing food. We're going to get into kind of the core reasons as to why food banks exist and why they need to exist and the challenges in society and some of the core issues related to poverty and how the government fits in and what are some good approaches, what are bad approaches, and just kind of attacking it from all angles in hopes that, people have better understandings of where the food bank fits and the role it it fits inside of their own individual communities.
Well, and I really appreciate the opportunity to do this because, you know, I promised my mom when I got in radio and I was 13, 14 years of age, she said, when you hit it big, you better give back to the Lord's work. And I said, absolutely. And I've tried to do that in a lot of different ways by starting our own foundations and helping other people. But, you know, I want to be a radio station that not only is entertaining and gives you good content, but I want to be instructional. I want to be informative. I want to be holy. We got more people now using food banks than we ever have in the history of the world, which is amazing. And so, you know, if people can learn some things from our new show and from this show here on Mission Minded, we've certainly gotten a lot of that information as well, then it's a wonderful thing. And we're doing some work here. Let me ask you this. You cover 35 counties with the heart of Alabama Food Bank. Who decides how many counties you cover? And if someone said, listen, we can't cover this anymore, can you take our counties on it? And when would a possibility be where perhaps you'd give counties up? I think it sounds great. You have 35 counties, but you could obviously serve 20 counties much more efficiently than 35.
Sure.
How does that work?
Sure. Yeah, so Feeding America, it contracts with about 200 food banks across the nation, and every county in the United States is assigned to one of those 200 food banks. So there are four Feeding America food banks here in Alabama. And so, for instance, the Central Alabama Community Food Bank is in Birmingham right above us, and they had a smaller food bank, what we call affiliated food banks, that contract with us to help carry over. So we have four affiliated food banks that help us cover those 35 counties. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, we're contracted for all 35, and we're responsible to Feeding America for all 35. But these smaller food banks, and this happened back in 2010, the food bank in Birmingham was not able to sufficiently support them. And so Feeding America reached out to Montgomery. Of course, I wasn't here at the time, and said, hey, we don't feel like we're able to get adequate service there for whatever reason. Can you take on those 10 counties? And so the answer to that question was yes. And so then they fell up under us. Now, we're also in talks with Birmingham down the road to maybe those 10 counties going back because the leadership is so much better and they're more prepared. And so as long as a county, as long as there's agreement between one food bank and another, you can actually pass those food banks. If you feel like you cannot provide adequate service and a food bank located in a different area is, then yeah, you can come up with an agreement to provide coverage to that area. So it's all internal, internally arranged. And as long as there's agreement between food banks, Feeding America gets on board with it typically, and so there's no problem.
You're listening to Mission Minded. You can hear it 10 o'clock Central Time, Monday through Friday right here. And wherever you get your podcast, we're available on every major industry. And the great thing about the TKR thing, now available on Android and Apple. We've always been available on both, but now it's TKR on both. You don't have to spell out Tony Curry Radio. Some people don't know how to spell that Curry part. You mentioned the four food banks in the state of Alabama. That brings us to our first email question here before we get into filling big shoes. Our topic here, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. All of your emails read right here on the show. Tracy Niverness wants to know, what do mission-like NFPs, non-for-profits, do they work with each other? And I know when you're talking about something as dire as food, obviously people have to eat, that goes without saying. But when you're talking about, say I have a non-for-profit for special needs individuals, and I'm trying to gain notoriety and as much money as I possibly can because I have a need for that in order to provide for the people in my county or my state. How competitive is it between non-for-profits and when do you work with each other?
Well, I will tell you, a lot of that comes from the individual culture of the nonprofit and the leaders of that nonprofit and the board of that nonprofit. So I come from a background that no matter what I'm doing, so I've been in workforce development with nonprofit space. I was over Jimmy Hale Mission, which is dealing with addiction recovery with a focus on people with homelessness. And here, so dealing with a lot of the same people, just with different focuses as I've gone around. And I want other nonprofits to know, look, I genuinely care about the people we're trying to serve. And so anybody, I feel like anybody who comes to the table with a solution or somebody who authentically is trying to resolve the problem that we're facing and lift up our clients and genuinely help our clients, I want to work with, and I want to collaborate, and I want to share resources with. The problem is that lots of times you can be in the same space, and nonprofits are very concerned about dollars, and they feel like, hey, I've just got enough money. If I start sharing, if another nonprofit starts getting some of the credit, they might get some of my donors, or they might get to know who my donors are. And so lots of times they build fences around the nonprofits, and they don't want to collaborate, not because they don't necessarily have a heart for it, but there's a fear that overrides the idea of wanting to collaborate, because somehow some people feel like if I collaborate, then it diminishes the importance of why I'm here. Now, you can go back, and I've had this talk many, many times with people who've wanted to start nonprofits. And I've asked the question, you know, are you wanting to start a nonprofit because there's a demand for that services? So let me give you this example. Mm-hmm. Suppose there's a homeless shelter in a city. Well, there, let's say this particular shelter can't meet the demand. Well, then you would need to either increase the capacity of that shelter, or you would need a second shelter because the demand is there. But some people come along, depending on what the area is, and they just don't like the way this nonprofit is conducting their business.
Yeah.
So it's not that there's necessarily a demand. They just come in and they do it a different way. And what ends up happening is lots of times in the nonprofit space, you get unnecessary duplication. And so then people become about, it's about you and how you feel like, you know, X, Y, and Z should be done. It's not necessarily fulfilling a need. So I've really tried to discourage people from starting a nonprofit because it does get competitive. There's only so many dollars to support this work. And a new nonprofit comes in, they'll be the flavor of the month. They may pull donors from other people, and it ends up hurting the work that's already going on. And it's really not, they're not there because they're needed. They're there because they, for whatever reason, just want to start another nonprofit. And that really ends up hurting more than it ends up helping.
Let me ask you this. So say I like to donate $2,000 annually to something for a non-for-profit, whether I'm using it as a write-off, you know, every single year you get to write off, you know, whatever you're giving to non-for-profits, or maybe I have a special needs son like I do, and I want to give to another organization. And I only get $2,000, and I want to pick, say, four or five of my favorite charitable organizations to donate to. Obviously you need to do a lot of research. I think a lot of people, and I don't think a lot of people do that. I think they get phone calls and I think they go, hey, listen, we're starting this new thing and we really want to do this. And tell me more information. Do your homework. It's like voting for the next president. Do your homework and find out, you know, let me ask you this. You're the man. When you're wanting to donate money to an institution or a charity, what are some of the questions they should ask before they donate?
Yeah, I just look at, well, you know, what is their mission, and does their mission coincide with what I feel like are my priorities? So, for instance, you know, you could have an animal shelter, and you're like, well, I'm really concerned about animal care and no-kill shelters, and so I would go there, I would visit, I would talk to the staff, I'd see how the organization's run, I'd see what the greatest needs are. You know, and then some people say, well, I don't really have time to get involved. And so, you know, I typically people give to what aligns with their hearts and minds. And sometimes that's the arts. Sometimes it's about social services. I mean, there's all sorts of different things that lead people to decide who and how much to help.
Is it fair to ask what percentage of your money is actually going to the cause?
You know, that is, you used to hear that a lot. That is becoming more and more an outdated concept.
Okay.
And the reason for that is, I mean, you can go on, you know, you can go on to Charity Navigator, you can go on to GuideStar, and you can download their, any nonprofit's documents. You can see what the CEO makes. You can see where they spend their dollars. But the reality is, it's getting to be an outdated concept that people do more with less. And you try to talk about, well, how much goes to services? So, because for instance, you know, when I got here, we had 36 employees. Well, now we have 52 employees. Mm-hmm. And then part of that reason is because the Montgomery Area Food Bank prided itself for years and years and years on doing more with less.
Yeah.
Well, what you find out is you're grinding people, you know,
you can do more with more.
Yeah, that's right. And then some people, and so, you know, what I found was I didn't necessarily, for all this time, it didn't necessarily have the culture that I'd hoped, you know, that it would have. And so lots of times, you know, it's a misnomer. People think, oh, well, you've got a lot of overhead. Well, you know, we have a lot of buildings. We have a lot of freezer space. All this is necessary. Now, I still think we're under 20% or whatever, but more and more the charity navigators are encouraging people to get away from that notion, because nonprofits, to be effective, you have to have the right amount of staff. You have to have the right amount of overhead. And of course you want to minimize expenses as much as you can, but you shouldn't judge a nonprofit's effectiveness on how big the staff is, or, you know, how much money is spent on overhead, because sometimes those are things that are absolutely necessary to run properly. And so more and more of the so-called expert charity advice sites are getting away from that model.
All right, final question on this, and then we got to get to our topic. And I think this is really fascinating stuff. Just a little bit of a dirty secret. And I got an email on this several months ago, but I didn't read it. Someone asked about mailing list. If you start giving to one charity, say it's the March of Dimes or whatever it is, ALS, whatever it is, are you on a mailing list? Do people now know that you're a giver and that you start getting other stuff? Because it does seem like whenever I give to something, I'm starting to get stuff from a lot of different charitable organizations.
Yeah, so it's no secret. Now, I will tell you, most charities that I'm aware of, we have never shared donor information.
Okay.
We consider that confidential, and I think most do. However, it has been, it's no secret that you can buy lists. So, for instance, if you subscribe to a magazine, you can bet your name is going to get sold out on a list, because what they do is they take your data. Even the U.S. Post Office sells lists. And you can go to the U.S. Post Office and say, I want to send correspondence to every household who make a combined $100,000 or more, and in these counties. And you can purchase that list, and it will go out directly to those houses based on whatever. And you do that for marketing purposes, because depending on what you're asking for, depending on what you're trying to make sure that you're trying to narrow down as much as possible who the right person is. You don't want to ask a lot of money from somebody who doesn't have the money to give.
Yeah.
And so that's why lists are sold, and it's a very large business, and you can get them from most places. However, most of those lists do not come from charities. As a matter of fact, I have never talked to another CEO or executive director in the nonprofit space who has ever sold or relinquished their list of donors. In fact, most people are deathly afraid of that information getting out, because you don't want to share your names with anybody for fear that they will begin to solicit them and take your donors away.
Yeah, and that's a good thing to know. He is Michael Coleman. He's the CEO now of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. We broke that news earlier on this particular episode of Mission Minded here, keeping your mind, your mission on your mind. Of course, you can hear the show 5 days a week, 10 a.m. and a brand new show we're going to be starting later on this week. We'll have some details on that. We're super excited about that, talking about the brand new Heart of Alabama Food Bank. That was Montgomery Food Bank since 1986. Is that when you
started?
That's
right. Yep, 1986.
That's quite the brand name, and what a great change, and probably very welcomed as well. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We got some more emails. We'll get to those next week here on the show, but I did want to get into our topic here. I think I was the Pat Fitzgerald story, the Northwestern head coach. who had spent well over 20 years of his life as a player, as an assistant, and then a head coach of Northwestern, coming off a lousy year last year where he went 1-11. So maybe there was more to his firing than just this hazing incident that everyone knows about in college football. But David Braun, who is the assistant coach, is now going to be the interim head coach, and obviously maybe his chance to become the head coach at Northwestern. And I was thinking to myself, okay, if Pat Fitzgerald left on his own accord, maybe he retired and he left on a good note, those would be some mighty big shoes to fill, because it's hard to get good recruits at a place where it takes very high ACT or SAT scores to get into, much like Duke or Notre Dame or, yeah, or Boston College. And I was trying to think of a topic to go along with that. And we've seen it in every business where, you know, your number one sales guy, your number one on-air personality, your number one, whoever it is, decides to move on or retire, and then you must fill those shoes. And I started thinking to myself, that's a mighty hard job. And you used the great analogy, who's going to want to fill Nick Saban's shoes when he leaves? Right. The old saying in college football is you never want to be the next guy. You want to be the guy after that guy, because you're going to be filling some mighty big shoes. So kind of take me through what it's like, and who you're looking for to fill those shoes. And then when that guy gets in there, what does he take away, or what does he learn from the previous guy's experience, or does he go off and do it his way?
Well, I tell you, and I just wrote some notes down just thinking through it, because I'm all over the place with this, because most of the time people are – well, I won't say most of the time. A lot of times people are faced with a situation because somebody found a better opportunity, and even though you want them to stay, you know, lots of times they're just – But lots of times they want a different opportunity because the work culture is not good. The pay is not good. And we've talked about that on other shows. You know, shame on you if you have somebody that's so valuable, if you have a Nick Saban-like leader on your staff and you have not done everything you can to provide them the reason to stay. Because people like that don't come along every day, and they're incredibly hard to replace. However, having said that, it is true that we all lose good employees for whatever reason. It could be due to retirement. It could just be they're ready for a change. Or maybe you don't have the capability of paying them what they're worth, and they just have to go take advantage of that somewhere else. I have seen leaders wring their hands incessantly about this. I just look at it a little bit differently. I look at it as a great opportunity to rethink a fresh approach. Now, I admittedly, I'm somebody that can get excited about change and about looking at something different. But if I've had somebody in the organization working a job, let's say for 10 years, and they've been really good and they're really dependable and they're there every day, and you can just check the block, they're going to show up and they're going to do dynamic things. You can also bet that there's a little bit of downside. Most people like that once they get comfortable in what they're doing, they're not looking to innovate. They're not looking to continue to challenge themselves. And so when you get past the fact that you're missing somebody, I always say, all right, what opportunity is present here? And almost without fail, I get a lot of good things that come up from situations like that.
Okay, so you kind of caught me there, because I thought you were going to continue to do that.
I decided I'd take my breath and let you.
No, you had me. I was walking off the ledge there.
I can tell you. I mean, just the thing that I have found is that technology comes out all the time, and there's all kinds of innovations that happen. I mean, almost monthly.
Yeah.
And you had somebody there a long time, and they've been doing something a certain way. It's almost a guarantee that there's a software program in which you can upgrade and make and do more with that position than was previously being done. But you likely wouldn't come in with somebody and disrupt somebody who'd been doing it this way, but was efficient, was effective, and try to squeeze out more juice. Well, when that person's stepping out, here's an opportunity to come in and just look at it, the whole thing, from a fresh perspective. So you start with what technology is available that now can do this job. Because what I've found is sometimes you can take what they're doing and replace a lot of it with technology and just take a few other of the key tasks and put them on somebody else and then give that person a little bump in pay. So instead of having to replace somebody who's $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, you might increase somebody by $5,000 or $10,000 and a little bit of money for technology. And now you're actually better than you were before. And you're doing it at a much cheaper rate.
Are you a big fish in a small pond guy, or just a nice size fish in a big pond guy? And the reason I'm asking is, listen, if someone's offering you the Alabama job, and I'll use that as an example because we brought it up, that's a great opportunity. No one's going to do as well as Nick Saban has done, because he will go down as the greatest college football coach, at least in our lifetime. I don't see how you can even compete against that. And he couldn't even sniff Bear Bryant until about 10 years ago, and all of a sudden, you don't even hear about Bear Bryant anymore. I hate to say it, but you just don't. And people are like, there's no way anyone's ever going to beat Bear Bryant. Well, he's doing that, and he's flying by him. So when that job opens, knowing that perhaps you're not a Nick Saban disciple or not up to his standards, are you better to take a job like that and know that you can fail miserably, or are you better off maybe being that big fish in a small pond until you're ready to take that leap? Does that make sense?
I tell you, you got to be a special person to be able to fill those shoes, because I think back when Bear Bryant was replaced, you had Ray Perkins who came in and did a respectable job. But then you had Bill Curry who came in, and Bill Curry, I thought, did a good job, but he never was accepted as one of Bear's boys. And so he was end up pressured out until they went back and got, you know, Gene Stallings. You have to be self-assured. You have to be confident in your abilities. You have to understand what you want to accomplish. You have to be able to communicate what your vision is for the program. And you have to come in knowing that you're not Nick Saban, but you still believe you can be successful. And the same is true when I come in, you know, so I've come in, I started my own nonprofit, but I've been to two other nonprofits as the CEO. And when I came in, it wasn't about how good the situation was before or how bad it was or who the leaders were. It was, hey, I'm coming in to evaluate because I understand organizational structures. I understand organizational health and casting a vision and then communicating that vision and getting people on board with the direction you're trying to move and how difficult that is and how challenging it is, because you've always got people that want to stay in the past and are afraid of change and what does it mean for them individually. So there's all these moving pieces, and you just have to come forward and be confident that your recipe for success will work in this place. And of course, as a CEO, it's a little bit different because you have the power to make some calls that maybe if I was coming in at a director level or manager level, I wouldn't be able to do. You know, I wouldn't be able to affect who's working where and what situation is, you know, fits best.
Yeah.
And so I recognize with the CEO, I have a lot of power, but it's definitely not easy, and you want to have the person with the right mindset.
This is where your faith and your skill and your belief in what you do. Obviously, if you're being offered a job like that, they obviously think the world of you, because they're not offering that job if they don't think that you can keep up the same level. I'm having these discussions a lot with my 18-year-old son who's fixing to go off to college. You know, I want him to be him. You know, don't be like the last guy. Learn from the last guy. If you can, meet with the last guy. Find out what he did and why he did it and why he did it so well, and maybe learn some things, then kind of put your spin on it. But you're never going to be that guy, particularly if you're leaving a situation or you're coming into a situation where it's someone who's just really beloved and they gave it all they got, and for whatever reason they're leaving that post. But, you know, there's nothing to say you can't do it better. And I mean, we sit here and talk about Nick Saban, but, you know, 100 years, there may be a guy who actually won 9 championships and not 7. I don't think Nick Saban's done, but I mean, it can always be done better at some level. You can't be 110% every single day.
You think about it, you know, you can learn good and bad from anybody. You know, the old adage about Michael Jordan, as great as he was, considered the greatest, and how many times he got the last shot at the end of the game, the hundreds of times he got the last shot that he missed.
Yep.
That he didn't pull it off, and all of his failures. So what I look at going back to the original question, so if I had somebody who was a key director who I was going to be losing, I would really sit down and look at the key aspects of their job. And number one, whoever their supervisor, whether it's me or whether it's them, do I know their job? So that's kind of a cultural thing that every supervisor should know how to do the job, not do the job, but should know how to do the job effectively and efficiently of everybody who's working underneath them. So I would make sure that those key things were identified. I would make sure that I understood the ins and outs as much as humanly possible. But I understand, no matter who you are, no matter how good you are, that job can be improved. And so, again, I look at it with optimism. I hate that I'm losing some experience. I hate that I'm losing a good person that can be relied on. But, hey, there's an opportunity there, and I'm going to approach it like an opportunity. Like going back to what I said, I'm going to get somebody who's dynamic, who may embrace technology fully, and they may launch us to areas that if I'd have held on to that same guy, we never would have lifted this department up to this kind of performance. So yeah, I know it's really difficult, recruiting, you know, and replacing successful people with people of even greater success. But really, the opportunity is there if we'll just take hold of it.
Mission Minded now with the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. We broke that nose earlier in the show, and we're super excited, of course, with Michael and his entire staff of 50-plus individuals down there. And we'll have more details on social media and, of course, your social media handles, not to mention your website and everything else. And we'll have that for you, hopefully, by the next show. We're also starting a brand-new show about the – this is perfect timing. Perfect timing with your rebranding and this new show coming on the air. So I'm beyond stoked and excited to do the show with you. So not only once, but twice a week, we'll be hearing some great stuff about the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. Michael, thank you so much for your time, bro. We'll catch up next week.
I appreciate it as always, brother.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.